Hello, everybody.
Okay.
Welcome to the show, Mael. Thank you very much for your time. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Mael. Nice to have you on. I really appreciate you share your time with us. And hello, Armin. And thank you, Armin. Thank you to Armin that you found Mael to join our show.
She found me.
Hello to both of you. It's a great honor to participate to this podcast videos, and it's very, I'm very grateful for you to invite me this time.
We are honored to have you, and that you just in the pre-talk you said that you watched about 10 episodes of our podcast, so we are honored, you know, that you
more or less but so, I have to watch all the others.
Oh, you're
I don't have time.
So you're one of our three followers.
Yeah. We need to find the other two.
No, I think we are quite numerous, but when I talk with French people, French archers, they always say, oh, yes, but 1 hour or maybe more in English.
Too much.
You are speaking very fast, and even if it's not your native language, and people you invite, like Petra or Murat, it's not their native language too, but...
Yeah. It's exhausting, I know. It's exhausting. And if I'm, you know, and I'm sure Armin will say the same, after our podcast, if we do it 1.5 or 2 hours, I'm done. Because you have to be highly concentrated. You talk in a foreign language and so on. So it's not so easy.
I talk all day.
Also not easy for us.
But you know, Yamal, you could use it as an example and do your own podcast in French language. I think it would be interesting too.
It's an idea, but I don't have the time to.
Why are you so busy?
Yeah, I made some little videos like this, but just like this when I want, and I speak about what I want, and no pressure, no. I'm not this kind of YouTuber. I don't think I have to post some video before Monday or Tuesday, or, and I just want to do video when I want, and even 2 months without nothing.
Makes sense.
And Mael, you're right, because it only makes a kind of sense if you make it very frequently and so on.
Yeah.
So if you just make it every 3 weeks or not on a fixed date, so you won't get on.
But maybe we should start from the beginning, because maybe not everybody knows you, Mael. Maybe you want to introduce yourself. Where are you? Where do you come from? What are you doing? Yeah. Your profession, and what are your hobbies? And you know, and how did you come to archery and all this? So, in
It will be a very long podcast.
Okay, I'm going to sleep.
So tell us.
In a few words. So I live in southeast of France, more or less between Lyon and Marseille, in a little countryside, very beautiful, called Ardèche. It's very touristic in France. Yes, there is a lot of people from Germany, Netherlands. I was born in Ardèche. And I traveled a lot in the southeast of France during my studies at the university. But I came back in my native place, but not the same village, but in the same region.
What did you study, if I may ask?
I began with a literature degree. And then it was for the French people une licence, a first degree at the university in modern literature, and then I worked in geolinguistic about French dialects, Occitan and Breton and other traditional local languages in France. And I worked on traditional music, traditional songs, and I compared the lyrics of the songs, and it was very interesting. But I would to to go back in the time, and I would to work about Middle Ages. Mm-hmm. And then I did a degree about medieval literature. Mm-hmm. And then I was a guide in a castle in France.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And I discovered archery during this period where I worked in this castle.
I'd like to interrupt you. Yeah. You studied French medieval literature or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, French, principally in ancient French, old French, mm-hmm. and old Occitan, and a little in Latin or so, academic languages.
I ask also because of in French literature, in medieval French literature, there's a lot about writings about King Arthur. Mm. You know this.
Yes.
I know how this guy. You know mm-hmm. it better than I know how this guy was called Chrétien de Troyes. Exactly. He wrote the best, I think, story of King Arthur of England. So mm-hmm. there, England and France connects with the medieval literature, no?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. I did my degree about a Briton writer, and it was very interesting to me to work with a book in ancient old French version and English modern English version, because mm-hmm. the book didn't have been translated in modern French, and mm-hmm. then I had to work with American studies done before me, and it was very interesting to mm-hmm. work with French and English literature side by side.
Nice, yeah, I can imagine.
And after that,
it's yes. highly connected also because of the conquering of the Normans of England and so on. So it's very connected, all this literature,
yes,
I think.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's very interesting to do some bridges between these different cultures and literature mm-hmm. and mythology and all this stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because we used to say that medieval people has one place, they lived in their little village, and they never travel for all their lives.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally wrong, because there were a lot of roads, a big network of roads like today.
The Romans built the roads.
Yes, a lot of them.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And they travel mm-hmm. a lot all the time.
Mm-hmm. And even if they had not traveled themselves, there were a lot of travelers and bards, you know, and singers,
yes,
and people around. They, mm-hmm. they told them from other cultures and so
mm-hmm.
they narrated from mm-hmm. other cultures. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Very yeah. interesting stuff you studied.
So. Mm-hmm. And it was a period where I discovered archery, medieval and traditional archery, because mm-hmm. I
began this castle.
With, mm-hmm. yes, in this castle. Mm-hmm. First of all, I was a guide for the visits, mm-hmm. and I practiced calligraphy, medieval calligraphy, you know,
okay.
Medieval writings. It's more like my first job. I used to animate some workshops about medieval calligraphy or mm-hmm. Oriental inspired calligraphy,
yeah. mm-hmm.
with Persian alphabet, Arabic and Persian alphabet and mm-hmm. style of calligraphy with kalam. So a little, what's the word in English?
And
like a kind of bamboo, you know, mm-hmm. for writing.
Yeah. A quill, a kind of quill.
A quill, yes, a kind of quill, but with wood.
Yeah. Made in bamboo, yeah.
And yeah. one thing, I'm sure you know better than I, but I like to mention it. Most people forget France was highly connected to Spain. And in Spain, there were the Arabs and, you know.
Yes.
Before the Crusades, they were all Muslim people, and they brought their knowledge from Arabia and from Persia and so on to Spain, and at the border of Spain and France, so all these cultures interacted with one another. It's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And also the Jewish culture, because there were many Jews in Spain, you know, in I don't know,
Andalusia.
Andalusia, in Sevilla, and so on. And it expanded up to the north of Spain and to France. And so very interesting. And this also was the kind of cradle of Kabbalism and all this ancient mysticism and so on. It's very, I'm highly interested in this. So I love this stuff.
Yes. I have to say, for music, particularly for medieval music, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
I will speak
also for music. Science and for chemistry and religion and so on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then calligraphy and archery. Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, and the calligraphy, it was there were a spot, a little range with demonstration, you know, of archery, medieval archery with longbows, and it was just for showing people where the way we used to shoot during the medieval ages, and it was very very interesting to me because I didn't know that, and for me archery in France it was just modern archery, classical archery, and classical archery, it was not my thing really. There's modern bow, compound bows and all this stuff, it was really not my thing. But when I discovered the longbow, I immediately I would to buy one and learn to make my arrows, all my stuff, my leather stuff, and it was very, very interesting.
How old were you when you started archery?
It was in 2007, I think.
Okay, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more or less.
Nice.
And yes, and I practiced the longbow shooting, not the traditional longbow, but American longbow, modern longbow, especially during 10 years, more or less. Okay. And then I have discovered the Asiatic archery with a traditional traditional Asiatic bows.
Nice. So five years ago,
just before to come back to archery, my job now is not at all connected with my studies at the university. I am a musician and I play several instruments, all of the traditional Occidental area, Turkish area, Greek, Turkish, Balkanic, all this stuff, and Persian and Afghan music.
Nice.
And even to India and Oriental, South Oriental cultures. It's very, very interesting because I love all the bridges we can make in music with all these cultures. Like in medieval literature or something, and it's very interesting to see the link between the instruments in different countries and different regions and different times too. And my two local areas for working for music, it's Turkish music, Turkish classical and traditional music, and Persian music. And Persian, it's really my big favorite.
Yeah.
My favorite.
But you only play string instruments or wind instruments or?
Yes, no, I play only plucked instruments, but I begin to work some bowed instruments like the Iranian kamanche, for example, a kind of violin with a bow stuck on the knee like this, and it's a very, very beautiful sound, but the bow technique is very different to the
with a big plectrum
and it's quite different but very, very beautiful. And another Persian instrument called the santur, which is a kind of table sitar with many strings, and you use little hammers.
Oh, nice! But the sound is nice. The sound amazing.
With a lot of resonance and
nice.
Great sound. Good. But my main instrument is the oud, oriental lute, in a way, like Turkish and Arabic oud.
Mm-hmm.
The barlama, which is a Turkish lute with a very long neck, very thin neck.
Mm-hmm.
The Afghan rubab, which is a lute from Afghanistan with a lot of sympathetic strings, which make a resonance and a very beautiful sound.
Nice.
Renaissance cithern, which is a little instrument, kind of ancient mandolin. And the Persian, yes, of course, the Persian tar, which is a lute from Iran, with a very, very beautiful metallic sound too, and a technique very particular. It's very used in classical Persian music, but I'm still learning, and it's an instrument I just want to learn and improve, but not playing on stage.
Okay, but only for yourself.
Yeah,
soon you will play it on stage too.
Oh, yes, one day.
Nice. And you only play or you sing too on stage?
I used to say that I play only, but I used to sing a little.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a singer. I have never worked the voice as an instrument.
Mm-hmm.
But in my main musical project, it's a duet. It's called Ishtar, like the Mesopotamian goddess. And I play in this duet, I play with my wife, which is called Maël too. We have the same name.
Okay.
But it's not our fault. and she plays the harp, classical, but traditional harp, the lever harps with little levers.
Yeah.
And she used to sing.
Okay.
And then I have to make back voices.
Okay, I see. Okay, but, fine.
As far as I can tell you, I think you have a nice singing voice because you have a nice speaking voice.
Think so too.
I try to. But it's it's a voice is an instrument, totally different than my instrument.
And, I don't know if it's interesting, but I tell it anyway, because you're playing string instruments, as far as I found out. True?
Yeah.
And you know, when I'm making an archery school with my clients, I always ask them when the first, you know, ape man, or I don't know, invented the bow. What did he invent at the same time? And most people don't get the answer. And then I say, if I'm making one movement, you will instantly understand what I mean. And if they don't know, I pluck the string of the bow. And then, then they realized, I said, when they invented the bow, they also, or opposite around, it's not important, they also invented the first guitar or the first string instrument.
The mouth bow. Yeah, they had the mouth bow.
That's exactly how it is.
I think that it was first a music instrument, the mouth bow. So he sat there and
went, mouth, yo, no.
And then
I mean, no.
And then the rabbit.
Sorry, no. Let me finish. Sorry, no.
Let him talk.
The first thing is you have to survive.
Yes.
And after you can survive, you invent
and
the
if
mouth.
If you let me finish my sentence, you would I'm know sorry. What I'm saying.
Yeah.
He sits there and plays his mouth bow, and then the rabbit comes and thinks, "Oh, it's a musician. It's so nice. I sit here, listen to him, and ding, ding, ding." And all of a sudden, he takes it. And shoots a rabbit, you know, because he's smart. He doesn't have to run after his prey. I see. If you let me finish my sentence, you know that it was.
No, but it's bullshit. Bullshit anyway.
Prehistoric Walt Disney, you know, with the little rabbits in the forest.
I think in the first place they invented the weapon, and then the bow. Even don't know if they invented it for making
cover up that the rabbit doesn't see his bow and arrow. He was making music with his bow.
Music wasn't important back then.
You have no idea. Music was always important. But, music was always
interesting. But let me finish my narration.
No, you interrupt me, I interrupt you. So, Mael, now let's talk about archery again.
Yes, and then I say, and that's a beautiful idea, because in the first place, the bow and arrow is a bloody device made for killing enemies and animals.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, the same device is an artist's device to pluck the string, and you shorten the string and you have another tune and so on. So it's the first guitar, if you like. So, and that's a beautiful idea, in my opinion.
Of course.
You know, it's interesting because to me, you know, Turkish people, Turkish archers used to say that the first thing is not the bow, it's the arrow.
Of course.
Archery in Turkish, it's said ok çuluk, and ok, it's the arrow. And the arrow is more important than the bow. In French or English, we say archery. It's the bow, the main object. But I think, like you said, it was a weapon for hunting or fight.
And you kill you're able to kill a person or a game with just an arrow, but you couldn't kill anyone with just a bow.
Yes.
So the arrow, and that's what Byron Ferguson says. The arrow is the device which is flying away and killing the game or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's true.
And
that's
the bow is the tool. With the arrow, but the arrow
the
is
device.
The main object.
Okay. Yeah. Before they used this atl to throw the spear or a long arrow. So that's why it was always
The real arrow is the tip of the arrow. The only weapon.
The tip, the tip
it's
kills
the,
you.
It's the tip, yes.
And you know, an arrow is just a shortened spear. So at first they had a pointed stick, it was a spear, and they hunted and fought. And so then they invented the bow and so on. They said, oh, maybe we can put this spear on the string or so on. So I think I don't know if it's true what I'm saying, but it's very, I can imagine that, because you cut off a stick and you point the stick, you carve it like a point, and then you can defend yourself, you can attack, you can hunt, and so on. So the first device was a stick, a pointed stick, of course. And then
before we had the stone, I guess, right?
And about music, we used to say that the bow was first a kind of, not exactly with the lute family instruments first, but with the harp, for example. It was the first harp was a bow. And we had a piece of wood with a string. And when you play with the string of your bow, it's doing, doing, doing. And when the string is long, it's a low sound. And with the string is short, it's a very high sound. And then we said, yes, make one string and two strings and many strings. And it's very different notes.
The bow is the first string instrument, of course.
And we have a harp.
We have a harp.
It's more evident with ancient harps. I don't have some pictures here, but ancient harps were really like this.
Yeah, I know.
Really like a bow with
like a bent stick with strings.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. With the sound hole and the body of the instrument on the knee, but on the downside of the instrument. And it's easy to make the link with the bow when you see this instrument. It's not quite evident with modern harps and even classical harps, very big.
And that's the interesting part to me, what I'm telling my clients. There's where art and killing connects.
Martial art.
Which is very interesting.
Exactly. It's Eros and Thanatos.
Not martial arts, arts.
Yes.
Music.
Martial art is an art too.
If you like.
And killing can be an art too.
Killing is an art, so.
So it has the same root, the same source.
Of course.
the bent stick with a string is a killing instrument and an artist instrument, and that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yes. You made your point, yes.
I was sure. Yeah.
Mm.
That is interesting. There's no discussion about it.
Of course, it's interesting.
And most people don't have the brains to connect it.
Mm-hmm.
And to say it first.
Most people think archery is an Olympic bow. Of course, you don't get any connection to a music instrument when you see them with their broomsticks pointing in all directions. And like
between the compound and the classical harp, there is a little gap.
Yeah, exactly. Mostly gaps.
Yeah, but I don't know if you like to say it this way, Mile. There's also a compound bow is also a nice thing, because it's the peak of the evolution of the inventions with the bow.
Yes, it's like a traditional lute and electric guitar, you know.
It's the same thing.
An evolution, exactly, but it's the same thing.
Exactly, yeah.
The same principles.
It's the formula one of both.
Mm-hmm.
Like in car racing, it's the same thing. Yeah.
But I like old things, and then I have more pleasure with a traditional acoustic instrument than with a very modern instrument. But I have an electric oud made by a friend, a French luthier.
Yeah.
Or there is some balamas from, there's a lute from Turkey with a system, electric system, and you can play kind of metal or some very modern music on those instruments.
And it's very hot to do.
It like I like to shoot with a wood
bow.
That's better.
But it's also a hot thing to shoot with a compound bow, because it's a different thing. Yeah.
But it's like not you exactly say with the same technique. It's the same globally the same movement.
Principle is the same.
And every one of it has its own magic to it.
Like an electric guitar played by Jimi Hendrix has a magic to it, or by Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Aren't these all communists?
Of course, they're all communists, That's why they're all dead by now.
But it's interesting to make those links with music and archery. Because to me it's very important when I'm interested by Turkish archery and Turkish music, or Persian and Mongol archery and Persian and Mongol music of this period of Persia was invaded by Mongols during the 13th century and many centuries, and it's very interesting. But like in I'm very interested by the step archers, step mounted archers, and by the 100 years war, la guerre de Cent Ans, because it's two different periods, but it's very interesting to see the, in one way, the comparison between Asiatic archery and Western archery, and it's interesting to see the evolutions and all the different the different evolution between these techniques, then staff and armors and the arrows, the bows, of course, and at the same time the culture, the language, the way of living, the architecture and clothing and all that stuff, and language, because it's very interesting to me to see every time as the languages could evolve, like in French with from the Latin to the ancient French, and with Germanic or English or Italian and Spanish. And at the same way, in Oriental, Asiatic way, with the Persian and the Mongol and the Turkish and all these other languages and cultures.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Very interesting.
It's a big melting pot.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I want to ask you one thing, Mael. So you're interested in Turkish and, you know, this music and archery and so on. Why you aren't
once interested? Once again, sorry.
No problem.
Yes. My webcam is my phone, and so when somebody is calling me, it sounds.
Yep, no problem. Sorry. No problem. And I'm also interested in that stuff, of course. But why aren't you interested in French archery and so on? Why you're more interested in a foreign culture than in your own?
It's the same problem with music. I think for me, it's very interesting if I'm interested by exotic cultures or foreigner cultures. It's important.
Don't get me wrong, I'm too. Yes. But I'd like to ask you.
But I'm at the same way, I need, for me, only for me, to be interested too by here and now. And it's always interesting to have a large vision in space and in time. And it's not just only this place at this period, but I have to see in the globality.
In a holistic view. Yeah. I understand.
You can say it like this.
And maybe one point, it got just in my mind. So your French culture you have in you anyway.
Mm. Yes. Mm.
But you win if you're looking at another culture. So you're adding knowledge and understanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
That's true.
I can learn Persian music, for example, but even if I'm learning Persian language, Persian poetry, Persian culture, and all this stuff, I will never be Persian, Iranian. And then I need to just to touch with the finger this great culture, but it's the same thing with archery. I am not Turkish, and then I can read a lot of books about Turkish or the steppe people archery. It's not my culture, it's not my way of life, and then I can just learn some things, but it's not, I'm not sure it's the right way.
I also ask it because many people tend then to say, oh, this culture is superior or so. And that's not true. You know, in Turkey or in Persia, things evolved differently than in France or in Spain or in Austria or in Germany, any place, because they had different conditions and different circumstances and so on. So, and a lot of simple people like to say, okay, that's a better culture. And you know, the Eastern cultures, they know a lot more than we know and so on. But that's not true. It's just different. They had another purpose to invent things or make their stuff. And we in the North or in the Western world, or how you like to call it, there were other challenges to master. So the cultures evolved differently. And it's not the English longbow is better and not the Asiatic, I don't know which bow is better. It's just equal. It's just for this purpose this bow was best, and for this purpose this bow was best. And that's interesting, and that's what I like.
Exactly.
And that's always what we are, Armin and I'm doing in our podcast. We like to connect cultures and say, okay, that's not superior and that's not superior, but it's all archery, it's all arts, it's all guitar playing, or I don't know.
And as we said a few times, to understand archery, you need sometimes to know a little about religion. You need to know a little about the culture, that you understand why they did what they did with the bow and arrow. I mean, we had this topic slightly scratched with Murat at the time, because he said, oh my God, you know, this is, you need to study and understand. And of course, then we talk about religion and we talk about culture and politics. Yeah. And some people, we need to talk about bow and arrow.
But and mythology, understand. There is a lot of mythology about archery.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you, Mael. You're my best friend, because I always have to fight this. And I tell you, I'm a big follower and a big fan of Murat. But in his way, he's a kind of Turkish, you know, that's the best
he's
way.
Very Turkish.
And so on. Yeah, yes. It's okay. No problem with that. But I think if we really like to get into the core of archery and history and music and poems and, you know, literature, you have to step one step outside and look it from a bigger view and have to, okay, and so on. That's my opinion, and that's what I'm always criticizing, where, because there are lots of, you know, English longbow, it's like a religion, and Asiatic bow is like a religion, and so on. And that is just stupid. They don't get it. They don't understand how cultures were built up and involved, and so on. And so that's what I want to say. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. But yes, we have to stay open-minded with all this stuff, because I used to see music at the same way with archery. You know, I can't bear nationalism and all these politics or religious things which say it's my country or my religion the best and other is shit and just not interesting. Mm-hmm. And it's a problem when we chat with certain people, because yes, as you say, for certain person, I don't know, Chinese or Korean archery or Turkish archery, or I don't know, it's the only way or English archery.
The top level of everything and so on. Yeah.
Yes, but there is not the best way. It's like in music, you know, I love to learn and to touch, to play, if you want, a lot of different instruments for different countries and different culture. But if I want to improve really one or just a small selection of instruments, I have to go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper in one culture, one technique, one musical language, because we can't be a specialist of every kind of style in music or in archery, for example. And that's just why I choose to interest myself particularly to Turkish archery, Turkish and Persian and Mongol, Turkish and Persian archery, because it's a choice and because I had to choose one area, geographic area, to improve my skills and my knowledge. But I'm very interested by the archery during the Hundred Years' War, because it's my country, my culture. Yeah. It's
you for the English.
I know. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
for me, English archery or Turkish archery or Korean archery, there is no best. Just like different instruments.
And what we always talk about with Armin and in all our podcasts, you know, even in that old ancient or medieval times, a lot of the writings was war propaganda. So the superior English longbow, they destroyed everything. It was the same war propaganda as when the Mongolians or Turkish said, we can shoot about 300 meters and hit an apple or something like that. So, you know, it's like today, war propaganda. And, you know, all the guys who wrote books back then, 400 years or I don't know, ago, they also just wrote what their, you know, their higher superiors taught them to write in their books. And nowadays, guys like, I'm sorry to say it, but I say it, guys like Lars Andersen took the Saracen archery book and said, oh, they were able to shoot, I don't know, 700 arrows in 2 seconds. Oh, that's, you never know what is true, what was propaganda back then, what was war propaganda back then. And so if the English said we can hit, you know, in the War of Roses, I don't know, 200 meters and we penetrate every armory of the French, it was war propaganda.
Yes, exactly.
And a lot of people don't recognize, don't understand this.
Yeah, but on the other side, with Lars, you know, he saw then Saracen archery, they shoot 3 arrows before the first one hits a target. And I said, okay, challenge accepted. I try this. And then it's he practiced until he could do it. If they could have done it in the past,
question mark.
At least to recreate what they wrote in the book, if they were able to do it or not.
That's what I said to Murat. I said, maybe because of that old writing, we are testing and trying stuff they couldn't do, but we trained so much so we could do these 3 arrows a second, or I don't know, because they just wrecked against the enemies.
Yes, but I personally think in this times where this book was written, there was the profession of an archer, so to say, and this guy had nothing to do all his lifetime than to shoot bow every day for 10 hours.
No,
unlike us,
that's not true.
On a weekend, or like Lars Andersen,
you know why I disagree and why I say no, because back then in medieval time and in antique or ancient times, there were very small groups of professional warriors.
Exactly.
Most of the warriors were just drawn in when a war was happening. Yeah. So there were just a few really professional archers or swordsmen or so. Most of them went into battle with a spear.
Yes, and I didn't say all of them. A few, maybe the lifeguards of the emperor or whatever. They had special skills, like now there's a bodyguard.
And Mael knows it for sure, especially the English longbowmen were auxiliary troopers. So they were not warriors. They were peasants, and they got from the kings a kind of rule to train archery on Sundays and so. And if there was a war happening, they said, there, you have your bow and your 32 arrows, I don't know, and shoot what you can. I don't think they all were very skilled archers. But if you have 10,000 of peasants shooting an arrow into the air or so, of course, that has an affection to the enemy, in my opinion.
We have to remember the origin of the word soldier. It was the sold. I don't know if it's the same in English, but the sold in French is the salary of the soldiers.
Yeah, in German too, the sold. We had
like a legionnaire. Yeah, legionnaire.
Yes, exactly.
Legionnaire, he legs an egg.
I'm sure you know it, Mael. The first guy invented, I don't know, maybe Armin knows the right term in English, the Wehrpflicht.
That you have to go to a military, that you have to must join the army as a young...
Was Napoleon Bonaparte. Mm-hmm. You know, before... the responsibility to go for a young man to the military.
Like a military service?
Military service, yeah.
Okay.
Before that, in most cases, war and battle was a thing of the nobles. So the knights fought against another, and the simple, or I don't know, poor people weren't, of course, if they plundered them or so, no, that happened, of course. But it was not the thing of the common people to go in a war, because the knights fought one another. And Napoleon was the first to say, you have to go to service from, I don't know, 18 years to, and so on.
And the first professional army. But, you know, it's important to remember that the big range battles were very, very, very rare during the medieval ages, because during all the Hundred Years' War, there was there were only six big battles, like Azincourt, Crécy, Poitiers, etc. Very famous with all the archers, English archers, and all this stuff. It was very rare, but at the same time, it was so expensive, and so expensive in money and in people and in equipment and stuff and all the thing that what the world a realm needed a lot of time
to get his army together and
after the battle, it was all connected to money, of course.
Yeah.
It was exhausting for the realms and for the people.
The same like today. If you like to get into a war today, you have to have a lot of money. Because you have to buy tanks and missiles and I don't know, and airplanes and so on.
It's interesting to make the difference between the English archers and the French archers during the Hundred Years' War, because English archers, the first, were the King of England said, "Yeah, we have to make a lot of peasants, rich peasants. It's the yeoman, you know, the yeoman. It's rich peasants." They had to train every Sunday after the church, and they have to practice archery. And then they had to choose the best archers, and they bring them in the army. But the people had to buy his bow, his arrows, and his stuff in military. And then to be an archer in the English army, it was just the little soldier like this, but it was not very glorious to be an archer in the army. But in France, when the King of France said, "Oh, English archers are very efficient, we have to have the same." And then he recruited a lot of archers with a training, and and he paid himself the stuff. And then French archers were kind at the second part of the war. The French archers were a lot of more high placed in the army. They had a best rank than the English.
And correct me if I'm wrong, because I think you know better than me. And the English in the first battles, I don't know which was of Crécy or Agincourt or so, was the first battle, but they surprised the French with their auxiliary troops, with the archers.
Yes.
Because they had the idea knights fighting one another, and they had 20,000, or I don't know how many archers and so on. So the French had an idea how a battle is to fight, and the English brought that broke that rule.
Yes,
and that was only in the first battle. I think it was a big surprise, and then, as you say, the French trained their own archers and so on, and that were not peasants and not poor men or human, as we know, and that's that's very interesting.
Yes, during the Hundred Years' War, there were a lot of peace periods during war periods, and it was very long. So the first part of the war was very different to the second part of the war, because just for example, during the first part, the English, the English in the north of France would just destroy everything, take all the towns and just leave nothing in the countryside, in the mm-hmm. fields, in the towns.
Burned yes. earth. Like
exactly. This. But at the second part, they said, yes, we just need to conquer the territory. Mm-hmm. And then if we destroy everything, it will be impossible to take some
food
taxes
from
or,
the country and so, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So they just changed totally their way of mind, and they just yeah. say, yes, to be English, it's better to be French. And then mm-hmm. you just have to bow in front of our king and leave all the French stuff. And it was a kind of propaganda. It mm-hmm. was very different from the beginning.
Yeah. And if you think about the whole history or the whole story of it, it's very crazy because in the first place the Normans were Vikings. The French king gave this Normandy
yeah.
to the Vikings because they terrorized France. So, you know, and then they conquered England. And then the English fought back to France and so on. So it's very crazy if you think
yes, exactly.
It. Yeah.
And yeah. Scott Archer's fought with the French, and there were some French from Aquitaine, for example, who were English and not French. And it was very, very different of what we know now. And when we say English and France, they were not this vision of country as a nation, you know. It was just
a moment, just
a king
moment.
Or another one. But
Mel, yeah. We have to think about it. The idea of a nation only was developed after World War One, because before World War One, these were multicultural nations. France, Austria, Germany, every country had a lot of different tribes, or how you like to call it, and, you know, ethnicities, or I don't yes. know how to call it, were in one kingdom, or I don't know. And so the idea, we are just French. And it's not true in France, because there were Basques and there were, you know, the civilians, exactly. These are half Arabs, and yeah. they are the real French people. And in Germany it's the same. There are some Polish people and some, you know, of every kind of, and in Austria it's a small country, but even we have different ethnicities. So the idea of a nation is after World War One, because there were the new frontiers made.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And yeah. So a lot of people don't recognize this.
I agree. I think after the World War One, it was a lot of the nation, the country as a nation was the only good way of thinking. And if you said, oh yeah, I'm from Provence or I'm from Bretagne, it was not patriotic, you know. It was not the good way, because you just have to be French and serve the nation and the president and your French roots. But me, for example, for me, when you say, yeah, you are French, for me, no, I'm Occitan. I'm from Provence. But French is, it's Paris. It's not my home. It's not my culture. When I go in Paris, yes, we have the same language, but it's a countryside totally different. And it's not the same history, the same culture. And it's not the same country.
And you know, that's a kind of danger, not dangerous, but I like to call it that way, because, you know, all day now we in the news media and everywhere, this is racism, this is this, and this is that. You know, there just give you one example. In the First World War, Germany was partner with the Ottoman Empire.
Yes, so exactly.
There was no racism or Islamic and religious problem. They don't said, oh, these are Muslims, we don't like to. That's all bullshit, in my opinion.
Yeah, so I think that, politics is more powerful than religion in this case. Yeah.
And there was no war was ever fought because of religion, because of nations or racism. Mm-hmm. Or so it all was just, of course, about resources, about land, about okay, they can't go above our border and so on, over our border and so on, and that's natural, of course. If I'm a kind of tribe, think about the North American indigenous tribes or in every country, and we look back, it was the same in Europe. There were some Celts and Germans, yeah. And I don't know, and so they lived together, and if the one tribe went the other tribe said, oh, just a moment, that's our country, don't move on. Stay in your country.
Yes,
and exactly. And there were small compartments, small parts of the country. And you know, the big, big horrible thing the colonialism did, because I'm not the I say always, okay, colonialism, you know, it's a natural ongoing, because nobody thought bad about when they sailed to America, said, oh, they are savage people and let's look around and so on. It's not a bad idea, but it was like that in that days. But if you think about it, the very bad thing was after World War One, for example, in the Near and Far East, when they draw that borders. Because that is Iraq, that is Iran, that is Syria, that is that, and that is that. And
I don't like all
these peoples were just tribal communities moving around, strolling around. And so if something was bad, one tribe say, okay, stay away from, this is our country, and so on. But there were no borders. Yeah. And that's a bad thing. In colonialism, in my opinion.
Exactly. I don't like borders, but I like islands for like Malta or Corsica or Sardinia or this kind of islands, because
or England.
It's a natural border.
Yes, England is very big, but small islands are it's very interesting because yes, exactly, it's natural borders and you just
you can say these people sea. Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
it's not the same, but it's not people that say this is my home, but
and,
this
and they wanted to create islands in middle of continents, and don't work. Yeah, that don't work.
Yeah, but why did they want, or why did they do it?
Because you know, if you think about the Persian Empire, the Greek Empire, the you know, you name it, it was not about ruling that empire. It was not about the law of Rome was executed in England or you know where. It was just about getting taxes from these guys. They went to a chieftain, to a Celtic, you know, chieftain, and said, you know, we are the Romans and we protect you against your enemies. And you can have your religion, you can have your politics, do everything you want, but now you have to pay tax, you have to pay taxes to the Roman Empire.
And you have to, yeah.
And I have to say, I kind of like the English conquerors, because they let them their religion and they let them their everything. They just said, okay, you're now part of the English of the Roman Empire. I don't know.
But divide and conquer comes from the Romans, and they, of course, when you when you have the Persian Empire, you know, it's a really
they mess. Did the same.
Yes, I would too.
It's Alexander the Great did the same.
It would be nice too. Okay,
I'm sorry.
It's fine. You continue,
Persian Empire is a good example because we have to see it in diachrony. You know, during the time, because we have to remember that Persia, at one time it was Achaemenid and then Sassanid and then Turkish with the Seljukids, for example, and then Mongols with the Ilkhan and all the Mongol invasions, and of course Persian and Iranian after. And then it was very interesting because in Turkish, for example, there were some Turkic people from Kyrgyzstan and Central Asia.
Everywhere.
It's just, if you see this country at this period or at this period, it's not at all the same thing, the same language, the same religion, the same cultural way of thinking.
There was no racism. There was no religious.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And to me, to be French, it's just one stage, but I'm from my village because I live here. I'm from Ardèche because I live here and I was born here. I'm from
Occitania. By accident, by luck, by...
Yes, and we can, yes, by accident, totally. But my parents are from Marseille, for example, and I never lived myself to Marseille. But I am French, but I am European and I am Italian and I live in this universe. And it's just something. French is not more important than to be from Earth, for example, because I have a lot of interest in different cultures, but I have to see my roots too and to see where I come from. And I think it's very important for everybody to be really open to the other cultures and traditions. And it's hard to not criticize this because it's different. And in general, what is different is scary.
And from just from the difference, you're able to learn. And I'm sorry, Armin, please talk.
No, it's fine. We are already beyond this topic. It's fine.
Okay. What I want to say about it, and even, you know, I know it's how you call it, thin ice or a slippery slope, but I like to say it. Even if they say the Third Reich, the Nazis, they were not against foreign nations.
Of course not.
They had nothing, you know, they were every kind of people from all around the world. So they said not, oh, you're, because to today's right-wing parties, you know, in Austria, in France, in Germany, they say they are against strangers, you know, foreign cultures. But, and so they are Nazis. But the Nazis were not against foreign cultures. Of course, they did bad things to Jews and to gypsies and to gays and to every, no question about it. But it's not true that they said, oh, we dislike the Turks or the, you know, that's not true. That's not true. And all the wars, the war they fought or, the, you know, that world war was not about, oh, these are French, I like to kill the French, or I like to do that or that. That is not true. And I don't like to defend the Nazis, don't get me wrong. But what they are telling today is not was what was real history, what they really thought about.
Of course not.
Because the Nazis said, oh, our Aryan you know, how Aryans, they came from Tibet or they came from Persia, or I don't know.
So the myth.
So totally they were not against Eastern people, or, you know, what they really said, they were against Slavic people. But you don't know if this was propaganda against Russia and so
and
on.
Communism.
I think so.
Yes.
And so what we are getting today in the news and in all that stuff, you always have to study history to understand what was really, and to say, you're a Nazi because you don't like Turks.
Mm.
That's wrong, because the Nazis liked Turks.
Yes. Yeah.
And Japanese, because they were partners and yes, so on.
Exactly.
But look at the recent scenarios here. People don't want to learn from history.
Yeah, that's true. And that's the very sad
thing. And this is what I wanted to say before with divide and conquer. Of course, when you have a big Persian emperor, how do you call it? Reich. And of course you divide it then, because you make your enemy in small parts, and then you can let fight the small parts against each other when you are smart. And this is what they do right now too. And people are so dumb that they don't see it again.
And
on the other side, of course, you see that with the United Nations and with the EU and whatever, you bring all the countries together to get a bigger force to control them easier, centralized control.
But that's a lie.
The enemy will be sliced in small pieces. So because then you can take out small piece by small piece. It's
a normal
war tactic.
Armin and also Mael, the same people, they say everybody is the same. There are the same rights for every ethnicity.
Oh, Diana.
Wow. For every religion, for every idea around the earth. The same people in the UNO, and you know, they are the same people. They say, yes, but if you are a minority, that's different. And that's also not true. I like to keep the minorities, and I like to support them and so.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, the same people say, you're racist because this or that. They are the real racists, because they say, as we talked before, a white person cannot translate a text a black person wrote.
Yeah.
And that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
And that's racism, in my opinion.
Mm.
It's a big debate. But you, Armin, for example, in Malta is a special place for that. Do you feel in your daily life over there, this melting pot, this cultural melting pot, because Malta has been Italian and
the whole island of Gozo was once taken out by the Arabs. They invaded Gozo, the smaller island, and they killed everyone there. So we should be almost Arabs, but this is the Maltese in the heart are very strong. And this is, they are very, very special. So you can't say they're Italian. You can't say they're Arabic.
Yes, of course.
They are not French. They are pirates. So in their core, they are pirates. And this is, they still are.
When you speak with people in Malta, native of Malta since many generations or what, do you feel this multiculturalism?
Not really.
Not really.
The Maltese are almost all the same. So first they like you because they think you're a tourist. And then they see that you are four or 6 weeks there. And they think, oh my God, he's taken away our workplace. And then they don't like you anymore. My neighbors, I moved here. The first 4 weeks, all my neighbors, hello, good morning, hello, hello. Hello. And after 6 weeks, I said, hello, good morning. And they were not even looking at me anymore because they realized it's not a tourist. He lives now here. It's a foreigner living here. And they are, the Maltese are very racist. I have to say. They should not, because it's such a, what you said, a melting pot of everything. and they had so many leaders, French, English,
yes,
whatever, Phoenicians, everybody ruled this, but they are still in their blood. And even if they fight on the street, but if it's tough times, this one blood, and I'm not their blood. I have no chance here.
You know, I like to say one thing. It's again a slippery slope and thin ice, but a kind of healthy, I don't like to call it racism, but a kind of healthy sticking together, a kind of saying, of course, I like to help every foreign guy or people who needs help. That's no problem. But we talked before in the other podcast last week, all that Muslim cultures, they are superior to ours, because we are destroyed by that Marxist ideas that families have to be destroyed. And if a family sticks together, you know, with the Turkish or Persian or all that Muslim cultures, they say, we are a family and we stick together. And so they are more powerful. Of course they are. Of course they are. And in our Western cultures, family is destroyed by Marxism. And I don't know how you see it, Mael. You know, we say we have to save 95-year-old sick people in the, what is it called in English, Altersheim?
Old people's home.
In the old people's homes, yes, of corona. Mm-hmm. But it's okay if you do an abortion. So if you just make one step outside, so I'm not totally against abortion or something, but think about it. You have to save the 95-year-old by wearing a mask and doing this and that, and it's okay. I like to protect them.
I agree.
But the same people say, okay, the government should pay the abortion of a healthy child. I don't get it. Even today, because today, I don't know how it is in France or in Malta or somewhere, we have that, they call it baby claps. If you get a baby, you can throw it inside, and it, I don't know, I don't like to know it, but there's no need to kill. And that's kind of perverted to me. I can't say it another way. And I understand if there are some situations where an abortion is necessary. I understand it. I'm not against, totally against abortion. I'm not against it. But just to say, okay, the government should pay it, but we have to save the 95-year-old. I don't know. I don't know.
Yes.
Is this the way to go?
I think we started with archery, and now we are with abortion and coronavirus.
It's kind of
a big travel with words.
But we talked about cultures.
Yes,
and
exactly.
That's a part of the cultures. Because I don't think in Turkish communities or in Persian or the Arabic communities, it's just like that communist Marxist idea. Okay, if you like to have an abortion, just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the idea, you know, your body, your choice is not right, because it's not just your body if there is a separate life in you.
Mm.
And that the father has nothing to decide with that. I don't know. Is that really like that? Because without the father, there would be no child. So I don't know. And especially,
it's a point of view. I think with there's different culture, it's some subjects are very difficult to speak about with for example with Turkish or Iranian people, because we have some differences, cultural differences. But even with French people, it's very particular too. But when I speak about music or about archery, it's important to make some protections and some to keep some distance with certain subjects, because it's not the subject at this moment when I want to speak about music or archery, for example. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think I have my own point of views, mm-hmm. obviously. But with archery, for example, I say when I speak about archery with Turkish people, for example, we used to speak about Ottoman, mm-hmm. Ottoman Empire and all this yeah. stuff. And it's a sensible subject with a lot of Turkish people, because mm-hmm. Ottoman Empire for them, there is a big propaganda, and yes, it's yeah. something absolutely great, and yeah. yes, Atatürk and all the
same with Hungarians, mm-hmm. as I
exactly.
know.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's a big subject, and at the same time, it's very tricky to speak about this, mm-hmm. because I don't want to say it's bad or it's good. Of course, in France, we had some glorious things and some things absolutely not glorious.
But I'm sorry.
Yes, let's go.
I have to interrupt you just for, and that's, and you know, these are, I don't like to say it, but these are dumb people, because they don't understand. It's not about which archery or which tradition or which nation or which country is superior. It is about learning the truth. It's not about is Turkish archery superior to the English longbow. That's not the issue. And they don't understand it. It's the same with Hungarians. I know that that's Western archery, they are stupid, and so on. Sorry, I just like to throw that in.
You said it before, and I totally agree with you. But we have to say when you speak about archery, you have to how can I say this?
You speak very good English. Mm. I just like to mention.
Yeah.
Thank you, because it's not my point of view. I have an awful accent. But I said with for example with Turkish, I used to work with Greek musicians or Bulgarian musicians, and it's very difficult for them to speak about Turkish and Ottoman Empire, because in archery we used to speak Ottoman Empire when you speak about archery, of mm-hmm. course, and it's very difficult because you have to speak about all the empire and all the things, all the slavery with the janissary, for example, and all the slaughtery and the wars, and it was something awful. But
no nation was better or worse. Course. It's the same. Every nation did it, and. Yes, you have to step outside one step and look at the whole picture. That's my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not easy. I have a Turkish student here. And I let him last time shoot one of Simsek Turkish bows. Said, you look now like an auto. You look now like an Ottoman. He said, no. If then like a Chinese. He said, yes, of course. That's yeah. it. Deep in their roots, deep in their blood. Yeah, you can't.
That's why I used to prefer to say in medieval reenactments, I prefer to say I play a Seljukid character than mm-hmm. an Ottoman character, because it's the main period mm-hmm. In time. And then Ottoman is very, so it's heavy, it's something heavy. It's
mm-hmm. nationalist.
Not all bad or not all good, of course. They were a great empire, and they were a lot of politics and mathematics and science and all the stuff, and mm-hmm. No problem with this. But it's very difficult to say no. I'm just speaking about archery. I'm interested by bows and arrows and the culture about archery. Yeah. I don't do politics or religion or something. I just practice history. And as you said, Peter, before, when you speak about history, it's not about ideas, it's about facts. Mm-hmm. The history is done. Yeah. You know, the past is done. And then it's good or it's bad. Okay, it's a point of view, but it is.
Mm-hmm. And there's no tribe or no country or no nation or how you like to call it. Well, today we separate them in victims and conquerors, and that's not true. That's not true.
Well, the victims are conquerors at another moment or another
in a
time.
Certain time. It was like this. Another time it
because
was opposite.
The Black Americans like to get reparation money now from the government because of the enslavement of the blacks in the United States. Okay. So could we say, okay, so we like to get reparations from the Italians because the Romans conquered us and enslaved us and so on. So where's the, you know, where's the line? Where's the benchmark? I don't know. Of course, this was wrong what they did, and
it's very complex.
It's history. It's not. They had no bad back then when the Americans in the South had these slaves. They had no bad idea about. It's not about that you know the TV series and they like to beat the slaves and so. Because you won't beat your property, of course. So it's very difficult.
I love history because it's like a book already written, and you just have to read it. It's written. The end of the story is already written. So the end of the story of the life is not written, but we have the when I read a book about 100 years of
war, prepared.
For example, yes.
War of Roses.
You say there is a beginning and the end.
Yeah.
And I just want to learn something about this period and this thing, but it's written and then it's not very scary because it can happen a lot of bad things, but the finality is that we live in this world today with all the bad things and the good things, and we are what we are and where we are and with the culture we have.
And today we are able to recognize what was wrong in the past. No problem with that. But I can't say I need reparation or something like that because I'm not responsible what my grand-granddad did.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
And that's the very idea. You know, they said the Nazis had the idea. I don't know how it is called in English of the a kind of tribe responsibility. Or family response. In German, it's Sippenhaftung is the German term. And they say, you can say, if your brother is a criminal, you're a criminal too, like that. And if you say, if your grand-granddad was a criminal, you are too, and you have to pay the victims now. So that's crazy. Of course, it was not right what they did, but in their time, in their perspective, in their environment, it was not absurd what they did.
Yes.
And
not the conquerors, not the conquistadores in, you know, and you know, it's like that. And interesting enough, the leftist people they say, okay, they have to pay for things that happened 200 years ago that I don't understand it.
Yeah, we still pay to Israel, so
Yeah, it's okay, but it has to stop. It has to stop.
It was supposed to stop after 30 years or something.
And that kind of critical race theory, it's just I just heard it this week. You know, when your grandmother, let's say, was killed in the Holocaust, in the Nazi stuff, then you have a kind of trauma. You know, you even don't know your grand haven't known her, but she died in the concentration camp. So you don't know her. You were not in that time. You know nothing about it, but you carry on that trauma, and that's kind of crazy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
What can we do? As long as people still follow and do what the government...
But there's a big propaganda machine, it's not just about the Jews, it's about every...
One of the biggest propaganda machines is Hollywood.
That's true.
They always tell you exactly what is and what how we should think about family and about all these whatever.
All the big media.
Yeah, and then
they rewrite the story, the history. There is some films like some films about crusades, for example, and there is a vision. We can say, okay, it seems possible. Maybe it was exactly like this with all this. Characters and all this stuff, and when you say some books and some history books, very factual, you see yes, there is some right things and some wrong things, and you really have to make your own research to understand more deeply the facts, the real facts. And for a lot of things, and especially in archery, for example, we have to say yes, it was possibly like this, but we don't have the certitude. We don't know it at 100%, and it's we think it could be like this, but
we have no real report. We can imagine it was like this, but we really don't know. And if you think about the Crusades in our history, they say, "Oh, the Crusades! It was horrible," and so. It was horrible, no question about it. But if you think about that, the Muslims had conquered all the Mediterranean, all of Spain and the south of France. It was before the Crusades. So if you like so, the Crusades were kind of reaction about the conquerings of the Muslims.
But after the battles in the battlefields, there is some flowers all the time. It's like when you see, yes, the Crusades were absolutely awful. There is a lot of war, a lot of slavery, and a lot of bad things, but there is too a big encounter between Western and Eastern people, and a lot of culture and a lot of knowledge. And it was like we said before in the south of Spain, for example, it was this golden age where Muslims and Jewish and Christian people live together. And
good, it's good parts. Yeah,
exactly.
But on the other hand, all the rest of Europe was conquered by the Muslims. That's the other part of it. And the interchanging of the cultures was a good thing, but that the Crusades were a kind of reaction of the expanding Muslim culture is also true.
And we could have been invaded by Mongols at a time, but they just
everywhere.
At the beginning of Europe. And maybe if history has been different, maybe we should have been totally different today here because of just this. It's nothing in history, in the big story.
Yeah.
But on the other side, Mael, you see now it's now 1.5 hours. How quick time is passing. Because you said your people don't want to watch because it's more than 1 hour. But you like need to tell us how long or how much time you have left. We don't want to hold you longer. If you have something to do, then we can stop at any time and we simply invite you again if you want to see us again and want to be again.
No, on this when you want, it's problem. Very interesting.
He likes to get you out, Armin.
I'm just asking. I'm only respectful.
Not the chevalier.
With a big pleasure. It's very interesting. Sometimes I wonder if, yes, we are chatting like this. It's very interesting. And I have a very good moment with you. But I say, yes, are the people interested by this chatting? It's very kind of, kind of storm of a lot of ideas and a lot of concepts. And
But Mael, in my opinion, that's the strong side of this kind of, because of course we like to talk about archery and you know we know a lot about Turkish archery and so on, but the interchanging of ideas and you know I had a you know when Armin said to me tomorrow we have Mael on, I checked your profile on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh yeah, she's playing a kind of, you know, sita, and you know, and so I was a kind of skeptic, and I said, she's great, but now we talk, and we agree on so many things, and that's wonderful.
Yes, it's
and that is, in my opinion, that's the purpose of this podcast. So but we can
that you find people they agree with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then but Peter, then the first mistake was to ask me as being a podcast partner, you know.
I'm sure Mael understands.
Yes, of course.
But I don't
because I had a different impression of you.
Mm-hmm.
And now because we talk, and that's the key. If you ever talk to a person of another culture, of another country, idea, religion, you know, ideology. If you can find something we can agree on, and if you're honest, and Mael, that I found out today, is honest, because she's not crazy leftist and says, just the Eastern and the Persians are the good ones and we are the stupid ones. No. And that's the cause.
You know, it's something for me and for all your guests, I suppose, because I spent a lot of hours with you, with both of you, with the podcast or with Armin's the bow reviews or all the videos. And we are under the impression that in a certain way, we know you because we have watched hours of videos.
Mm-hmm.
But for you, we are totally strangers, and it's the first time. Yes, we have to see ourselves like this, and I think it's very 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 interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm very happy to this. But we have this. We have here in France, we have a Facebook group called Asiatic Bows from French community like this. And I know, yes, for this group, I think maybe all these videos, if I would brave, I would have to write all the subtitles in French because it's a lot of quick English like this, and they don't all speak English.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting for them to have this sharing with other people like you, other cultures and other other knowledge of other people. And I think your podcast, your videos are very interesting like this. I think the only problem, but everywhere in the world is the language, because everybody can't stay just 2 hours in front of an English video, and English is not our native language to all of us, then so we have to...
But so is not French and not German, that's the problem.
Yes, exactly.
But the good thing is there's a pause button, you know, and when after 20 minutes your attention span is not there, pause, do something else and continue at another time. So of course, many people tell us your podcast is too long. Then we make them shorter and we publish 4 podcasts instead of one a week. I mean, then they need to watch the 4. Then you need to remember, okay, I watched the first one. I need to watch the second one. Now simply pause and simply continue later and watch again. So it's you know, the same.
I used to practice music in workshops in Spain with a lot of musicians, but they are especially Spanish, but with the teacher, it's a wonderful musician, a wonderful friend musician. And we used to speak in English.
Mm-hmm.
Speak very well English, and then it's okay, but then it's 4 days, 5 days, and all the day we just practice music, and Persian music, Turkish music, Indian music, medieval, Occident, Western music, but all in English, and it's totally exhausting, because we have to learn a lot of things, understand a lot of things, do it again on our instruments with new techniques and new culture and new words, and it's very, very, very difficult. And after 5 days,
it's exhausting. Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. In a foreign language, even a discussion, and you know, I don't know how it is for Armin, but when a podcast is done, I'm kind of done, because you have to be highly concentrated. You have to be really into that stuff, and so
good. I'm a little more used to it. I live since 9 years now here in Malta.
You speak English every day.
I mostly speak English, and I have sometimes problems when I have a German guest coming, that I bring out all my German words, because you simply put them somewhere back down in your hard drive, so it's not in
du Polnisch reden willst.
The thing is, simply sometimes you can't express yourself 100% in a foreign language, because you lack words, you lack you know, there's something je ne sais quoi missing, you know, and then you can't you can't exactly say what you feel or what you want to say because you lack the words. But that's why we all struggle a bit, but we still manage, and we challenge ourselves.
Yes,
and
but
thank you for doing it too.
And you know, we have a kind of wrong view, because if I'm traveling to the United States or to France or everywhere, and I try to speak French or English, then of course I'm not a natural born.
It's not fluent, but it's an effort,
But they say, "Oh, he tries to do it." So we are a lot more self-critical about it than the others are, and so we are shy to do it. And I have to say it again: I'm so impressed and so surprised, because
I improved too.
Nice.
Wow.
No, it's very difficult, but it's very appreciated to do this when you are traveling in a country.
Yes, of course.
I'm so surprised and so impressed that because I had another view of you, Mael, because I've did my research, and we agree on so many things, and you're such a nice and clever person, I have to say, with lots of compliments.
Mm.
Really.
But you see, she studied history, and with music you study history too, so she was digging deep into these things, and with this you always get a wider perspective of everything, and you are way more tolerant, and you're not so
but that's not true. No, you're kind of equalizing her qualities, because that's not true with every kind of academics or so.
I didn't say that.
But you said, okay, because she did that and that. That's like... Yeah,
that broadened her horizon. Yes.
And I agree, but she's special.
Oh, she's very special. That's why she's in the podcast.
And we can't agree on every subject, but I think it's very important. And I think you are doing it very well since the first videos of this podcast. It was a lot of not real arguing, but sometimes you were not always agree. And there is this it's my opinion, but you have improved your way of speaking during this video, and there is a good sound quality. There is a good turn of speech. You know, we don't speak at the same time all the time, and it can be very difficult. Two people, it's okay, but more than two, it can be very difficult to have the word and don't cut the speech to the others. And I think you have improved like this, and I think maybe not this one because I am here, but your recent videos from the podcast are very pleasant to watch and to hear.
I think this one is too.
Even Peter had the wrong impression of me when he was stalking me on Facebook.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I thought Armin is a kind of just a kind of spiritual and gay guy, and, you know, nothing wrong with gays, but you know, I'm a kind of other guy. But me when too. I got him to know, I found out he's a nice guy.
Because we agreed on some certain things, you know. Once you start agreeing with some of his
opinions, we agree on some sexist things.
No, we don't. I simply only because I don't say anything doesn't mean I agree. And people who watch this podcast for a while, they know that sometimes I simply shut up, but it doesn't mean that I agree. But I
admit with shame that at the first. The two or three first videos you did together, I said, but why both of them? Because you are very different. You have a same hobby with archery, but you practice it with a big difference, with a Asiatic way, with a kind of martial arts. And you, Peter, I know you well, less, but there is other hunting side I don't know personally. I'm not in this kind of archery, but it's very interesting because it's one of the
aspects.
Principal goals of this practice. And then, okay, there is war too, but I prefer you to hunt that you make war in the street with your bow.
Thank you.
But
thank you.
I have to say, just to finish, that you should have done this podcast in German because it should have been maybe easier for both of you. But thank you very much to do this in English because we can understand.
Okay, you first.
No,
age first, age before beauty, it's fine.
Okay.
The thing is, if we would have done it in Germany, I'm from Bavaria and he's from Austria, we would have started talking in our regional language and nobody in Germany even would understand what we are talking. That's a problem. That's why I think it's better we speak English.
Yes.
Okay. To answer or to reply on what you said, Mael, is I think that's the strength of that podcast because we have different views. Because when Armin says something, I ask, is it true or so? And then in the opposite. And so this is interesting because we just would always agree who likes to see it.
I mean, you see it as an example. In Austria, there is every week this discussion between this Politblocker. He is a bit anti what is going on. And the other one, this Born Mena, he is completely pro everything was going on. And they have always really the hardest discussions and everybody falls into another word. And you know, they go already on a private level that, you need to go to the hairdresser and, you know, people like to see that, you know, if you have agreed parties floating around and talking about, oh, look, the spine of this arrow and this fletching is so nice, then we would fall asleep. But when I say, Madonna, like, they want to see some, you know, some action.
Yeah. But you know, it's very funny because when I'm watching you speaking just now, it's exactly like when I'm watching your podcasts with just you both or with a guest.
You're just involved now.
Yes, but I can participate. It's absolutely fantastic.
No, that's not true. That's not true. And I like to tell you, Mael, I would appreciate every time, and if it's every week, if we have another part, another component to our podcast, I would appreciate to have you frequently.
Yeah.
Because your view is an enrichment. And every view would be an enrichment, but especially yours, because you're really, I'm really surprised. I had a different view of your person because when I watched your profile on Facebook, and so you're really nice and you know about history. Yeah. And that's important. And yeah. If you know what, the people who say, I like to say it that way. The conservatives and the right wingers, they have a simple view of history. That's not true. I think a lot of right wingers and conservatives have more knowledge of history and know it's not that simple. It's the opposite around. And I have a lot of sympathy with the left. It's not no problem with that. But you understand what I like to say. If you have a deep understanding and if you study history without any ideology, you understand.
Yes, the problem is ideology.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you.
It's not, they are not goods and bads, they're just interests.
How did you get there, Mael, that you could study it without an ideology, that without thinking whatever you brought up with or you were raised from your parents and you had this point of
interesting.
View?
Interesting.
And then you started studying question. Without being prejudiced and said, oh, look, but these are the Muslims. How did this happen?
I think the main fact is curiosity. I think it's very important to be curious of the
other. Stay curious every time.
Oh, well, yeah. It's my way of life.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's very interesting to, first of all, to accept, and then to accept a new idea, a new concept, a new thing, a new culture, and then try to understand this. Why? Maybe there is an ancient story. Maybe it is religious. Maybe it is just ethnic or something. And sometimes we can't accept certain things just because it's different than our proper way of life. And sometimes we can agree, sometimes we just, it's so different, but we have to keep this open-minded way of life and be curious and just go to others.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I have to say, I never have a kind of finished opinion, a kind of, you know, that's how it is. You always can learn something.
Only with the Howard Hill longbow, there you have your finished opinion. It's the best.
No.
Big subject too.
No, Armin, you're not right. No. If you tomorrow send me some kind of bow, and some kind of, you know, technique or I don't know, and I find out it's a better way.
I know.
I'm not an ideologist, but as far as I'm into archery, I found out for me it's the best way to do it.
Exactly.
For like you. That.
And that's the most crucial thing, that it's for you the thing. And saying then all and Asiatic archers and bullshit and all making everything else bad is then not the nice thing when you say, okay,
but I can argue my ideas. It's not just, it's the best for me. I can argue every simple aspect of that archery equipment I'm using or the style I'm using.
Yes. But you can simply say that's for me the way to go. But then saying, but the others are all idiots in you with your stupid Asiatic shooting and with your reflex pose.
Yeah, but if
the arrow on the bad side.
Okay, if you have this all
on the wrong side. If you're able to beat an Olympic, it's not, a Chinese Peter, Olympic not, archer with you,
Peter, it's not shoot. Necessary to prove anything. It's simply respecting.
It's simply, proving is wrong.
Simply the respect to others. I respect every kind of archer, every kind
me
of
too.
And I said, me for too. Me, this me works too. The best, but I don't say, look, all these Japanese with their asymmetric yumi is such bullshit. I can't shoot this bow because I don't like this bow, but I don't say it's crap. For them, it's something working.
I don't say it either.
Oh.
No, I'm just asking the Japanese, why is the symmetry of your bows like it is?
Yeah.
And they can't give me an answer. Okay.
Some it's can.
Okay. But when you ask me why is the symmetry or the tiller of your hill style bow like it is, I can give you an answer.
Mm-hmm.
That's a difference.
Yeah, I can tell you why the yumi is like this, but it doesn't matter. It's simply the for me, it's the respect that I say, okay, this works best for me. Whatever I shoot now with the Turkish bow, I'm not so into the Turkish bow. I like the more the Tatar bow or something. That's for me, or the Korean bow. That's for me how it works. But
they are
longbow archer. But of course, I outperform every longbow archer with it. But it's fine. It's because I know it. But I don't say every longbow archer is now all this Western archer is stupid. You know, this is what I don't say.
It.
Oh, you said oftentimes.
No, and I ask, what is the advantage about?
No, yeah. Asking questions is different than playing the blame game. That's different. Yeah. Asking questions is always. You get always answers for it, if you like them or not. And sometimes you get the answer and you don't like it.
Yeah.
Because we just were talking about, like Mael said, you know, this open, being open-minded and having the whole. Yeah, sometimes even you need to step one step back and look from the outside, you know. Oh, we all should only
stick. I do.
Yeah, okay, that's good.
If you were always agree, it would be boring.
Of course.
So it's interesting to...
But we only agree with you, Mael. It's fine.
It's interesting to make some wood in the fire and...
Yeah, of course. You know, it could happen that this little spark is reaching something. Yeah? You never know.
Yes.
Yeah, it's nice. Yep.
Nice.
So since 5 years, you are now into Asiatic archery. How did you get this idea? So you shot the longbow?
Yes, the longbow during 10 years. And
what kind of longbow?
It's an American semi-longbow. It's from Canada, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the... It's a Mohican model, but I don't remember the builder.
Mohican, okay.
Mm. And then I don't remember exactly when I have discovered the Asiatic shooting. But I think we have a big medieval reenactment event in France, mm-hmm. Next to Paris. And there is a big market with a lot of crafters and makers. And
mm-hmm.
and I remember an English man who came and he sold longbows and Asiatic bows. But he had no infos about those bows. There were some... I think he said Turco-Mongol bow, but maybe it was more Central Asia bows. Or mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly the origin.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would to buy a bow like this because it was very beautiful with the
curves.
Yes, it was very beautiful. But I shot exactly with a Mediterranean release and it was exactly like the longbow for me, but with a different shape.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like in music, I began to play the oud with a guitar pick and mm-hmm. With a guitar technique, but it sounded not at all oriental.
Yeah.
And then the same thing with the bow. I said, yes, there is no window, and mm-hmm. then I said, yeah, maybe there is different techniques to practice mm-hmm. this bow. And then before I spoke about the curiosity, which is the main fact, but mm-hmm. I think the will of learning is very, very important too,
yes,
because you always go deeper in one thing and you just want to learn some details, and among all the details you can choose, okay, I prefer this one, not mm-hmm. because all the other is shit or crap or something, mm-hmm. but just because me personally
I like it.
For yes, you, I have more sensation, technique. More pleasure yeah. when I
show feel it. Secure, I feel confident with mm-hmm. that kind.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And just if I have to choose, I will shoot like this. But mm-hmm. you know, I went a few months ago, at the beginning of October, I was invited to the a forum with bow makers in France in the mm-hmm. Musée of the Archery next to Paris mm-hmm. in Crépy-en-Valois. I have made a little video about this mm-hmm. event.
Sorry, yeah.
It was very, very interesting mm-hmm. with a lot of archers. And there were a friend of Jean-Marie Coche, who were a great archer in France, bow maker, and mm-hmm. he had made a technique, l'école de la voix médiane, with a kind of breathing system like martial mm-hmm. arts, diaphragmatic breathing, and all a kind of shooting. And it was very interesting to shoot with this guy, and he gave me a longbow, and I didn't have shot with a longbow since years, mm-hmm. and it was so strange to put the arrow on, mm-hmm. on this side of the bow mm-hmm. and all the head, and
yeah.
It was very interesting, and I had the impression that I shot for the first time of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I did this all the days with my Asiatic, with my Turkish bow, but yeah. with this longbow, it was totally new, and mm-hmm. I was like a child with a bow bigger than me. It was very interesting.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
So we learn all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should. Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Great. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Any more questions?
I would. I'd have. Hundreds more, but I think I have
to come back.
Yes, we are now already.
That's once. What I wanted to say. Please, Mael, you're so nice.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, I had a kind of wrong impression because I thought, oh, she's mm-hmm. sure, she's like that and that, but you're different and you're so clever.
Come it's because back. I'm just not only nice.
Oh yeah. Of course, every but angel okay. has a little devil inside.
And did you see Armin? I smile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Took a while. Yeah. I had to remind you a few times that you can smile. Yeah. No, yes. Nice.
No,
and you have such a lovely smile, so you have to hear, you know, that's why. Mm.
Thank you.
I'd love to have you on again.
Yes, of course.
With pleasure. And
thank you.
Yeah. Let's stay connected.
Yes.
And let's talk again about cultures, about everything, and about archery, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Sometimes a little bit, yeah, about shooting.
It's a very good idea.
I think, especially in this talk today, what we read with Mael Coulange, this is right. Sorry for wrong spelling.
Perfect.
It turned out archery, it's not only archery, it's about culture, it's about...
Yes, exactly.
It's about...
It's about the
human ideas.
It's about religion, it's about everything. And that's the best proof that you can talk. What should I ask, Mael? What kind of bow? What string you're using? Not string, I'm sorry, it's sexist. But what quiver and what this and that. Okay, very interesting.
It's interesting too, yes.
Yeah,
we ask next time what equipment. Yeah. Maybe you want to prepare next time a little bit of your equipment.
Yeah, no problem. I don't have this in this room, but yes, and in a few months I will move. in the new house, and I will have maybe all my stuff on the wall behind me.
Very
and,
good. Like
we'll have some.
Mm-hmm. Next time we will ask you about your favorite archery equipment,
yes,
and your shooting style,
yeah,
and so on. Mm-hmm. So you see, we talked with her and we never talked about her bow and her...
Yes.
I'm sorry.
I mean, we need a lot of hours more.
Yeah, but I mean, I know what you're shooting, so that's why it's fine. But
I appreciate if we have her again.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
So in four to five weeks latest, because otherwise he will miss you too much.
Yes, of course.
So when do you move? When did you move? He said
3 weeks.
Maybe during spring. Not now.
Directly.
We have a lot of work in the house now.
Okay.
You need a man in the house.
I'm sure not.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Mm-hmm.
We have to talk about this next podcast.
Okay.
for the move, at least, you know, for putting stuff and carrying heavy stuff, maybe.
So, see you soon.
Okay. See you soon. Merci you beaucoup. Soon. It was really a pleasure to talk to you.
Merci beaucoup.
Merci à vous.
And we see you very soon, okay?
À bientôt.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mael.
Have a good time.
Bye, guys.
Goodbye. Bye-bye. Goodbye.